Hello and welcome to the Majlis podcast, Radio Free Republic of Liberty's current affairs talk show focusing on Central Asia. I'm Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis and Radio Free Republic of Liberty's media manager here in Washington, D.C. March 8th, International Women's Day, a big day in Central Asia, a day which every year commemorated mostly as a national holiday. This is also an occasion in which the Central Asian leaders give big speeches in state-sponsored ceremonies praising women for their contribution to society, their achievements, beauty, and love for family values and traditions. But what the authorities don't mention is the fact that women who make up over half of the population also remain an easy target for domestic violence. So we thought in this episode of Majlis podcast, we will mark this day by giving a platform for the representatives of women to speak about their issues, challenges, and opportunities. To do so, I'm joined by Natalia Nikitenko, deputy leader of Atamekan Party and currently a member of the Kyrgyz Parliament. Natalia is joining us from Bishkek. Irina Matvienko, feminist and founder of Nemolchi.uz. Irina is joining us from Tashkent. Jasmine Cameron, senior staff attorney at the Center for Human Rights of American Bar Association. Jasmine is joining us from Washington, D.C. And Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free Republic of Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlok Uwazi. Bruce is joining us from Prague, Czech Republic. Thank you, colleagues, for joining us today. So it's been a tough year, and the recent report by Jasmine's organization says that it was even tougher for women in Central Asia. So, Jasmine, let's start with you. Give us some highlights from your findings in the report.
Thank you so much for having me here today. It's a very important topic to discuss, especially in the upcoming celebrating holiday of International Women's Day, March 8th. I remember growing up in Kyrgyzstan, March 8th, as you mentioned, was such a big holiday, still is a big holiday. But the irony is that one day a year, women were celebrated for their achievements, contributions, but the rest of the year, unfortunately, the situation of women's rights, situation with political participation, situation with domestic violence was and continues to be a challenge in Central Asia. But in order to make a fair assessment of general gender equality in Central Asia, it's also fair to say that in the last couple of decades, there were certain gains and achievements that took place in the region and all over the world. For example, the number of women representation in political life, specifically in parliament, double compared from 2000 to 2020. About 22 heads of state of government now women. But of course, challenges remain. For example, women still continue to earn significantly less than men. Women's participation in politics remains to be a challenge. Domestic violence continue to be widespread in the region and specifically in Kyrgyzstan. I would like to focus on Kyrgyzstan specifically, where the laws on protecting and providing gender equality on paper sound really good. For example, civil code, penal, labor code all provide and establish equal rights for women. In 2017, there was a new law adopted on domestic violence. Last year, there were some legislative initiatives that improved the situation for women. But unfortunately, in practice, these laws do not always work and are not always implemented. In our report, we found that, unfortunately, violence against women is widespread, and women continue to be subject to violence, bride kidnapping, trafficking, early marriages, and physical abuse. We looked at these three specific cases where women's access to justice, unfortunately, was very difficult or denied. The first case that we looked at was the case of Kaliara Bekova. She was the subject of gender-based violence, and her case still lingering in the system, legal system in Kyrgyzstan since 2013. But the sad situation with this case is that the victim of sexual violence, unfortunately, still seeking for justice. The perpetrators of this violence are free, and the system cannot hold them accountable, sadly. Another case that our trial watch initiative monitored was the case of Guljan Passanova. She is the victim of domestic violence who was abused for many years. And unfortunately, she was the defendant in the case where she was protecting herself and accidentally killed her husband. The trial watch monitored the case in court and found many fair trial violations. Unfortunately, the lawyer was also publicly harassed in court and outside of court. For example, the prosecutor during the court hearings was making inappropriate statements. And unfortunately, the defendant was sent, the victim and defendant was sent to serve a sentence.
Mm-hmm.
Quickly, the last case that we monitored was a case against local profit organization called Bishkek Feminists that was organizing protests last year exactly for Women's Day. And they also faced challenges when the third-party people attackers attacked them personally, but also the government failed to investigate and prosecute the attackers.
Mm-hmm. And Natalia, I wondered what you have to say about the findings that Jasmine was sharing with us. Any comments, any observation as to what she was talking about?
Definitely, there are many issues and troubles still in the region and including our country, the Kyrgyz Republic. Despite the significant work and advantages that our country did, ratifying conventions, having the governmental strategies and policies on that topic, and pretty good legislation basis, still there is a problem with child marriage, with bride kidnapping and domestic violence. As a parliamentarian, I would like to mention that for the recent years, the Women Forum of Women Parliamentarians did a huge job to improve the legislation and also to make the government more accountable according to the programs for practical protecting the women and children against domestic violence. And we have some good news and bad news. The good news there are that we have the new legislation, and now we're working on the new piece of legislation, how to improve the law about the protection from the domestic violence. We also, right now, next week, are going to present the new legislation, the piece of legislation for the public opinion regarding the harassment and changes to the criminal code, etc., for harassment. Despite the significant efforts, still there is truly hidden problems, because this topic of domestic violence is very much related with some understanding on the level of society, traditions, etc. So what we're trying to do is to work with through the mass media, through the social networks. We try to work with societies, with regions, with each small village, etc., through different organizations, NGOs, local women organizations, and raise their activities and raise their voices against the domestic violence using the different tools. Also, we are working on the new strategy to keep the government more accountable, to include the National Development Plan, more practical tools how to prevent the domestic violence and not just work with the consequences. But unfortunately, right now, we're in the middle of the discussion about the constitutional reform. Why I am telling unfortunately? Because there are different opinions in the society about this reform that is going to change the parliamentary democracy to the presidential form of governance. But regarding the women's rights, I really concern about the offered changes, because it's mostly about the possibly majoritary system in the parliament. And now we have the proportional system and pretty good system of quotas, like the special norms for women to make the women more active and have the access to the decision-making levels in the central government and the parliament, and also on the local level. So right now we changed the legislation, and we have the requirement for the political parties that each third in the list should be the person of other gender. Right now it's a woman. We hope in the nearest future it might be the man. Also, we changed the legislation for local parliaments, where 30% of quotas is reserved for people of one gender. so far it's for women as well.
Natalie, that's very great what you are talking about and the initiatives that you guys have taken in the parliament. But when it comes to implementing those laws that you guys pass in the parliament, it looks like certainly there is a challenge. And you admit that, and earlier Jasmine also said. So what to do? I mean, you are the closest we could get to the government, and especially in this show. I was trying to get some other members of the authorities to join us, but that didn't happen. But you are in the parliament, so you have some authority as to how laws are passed, how these are implemented. So it's great that you mentioned your efforts about passing those laws. But what about those specific cases that Jasmine earlier mentioned, like Kalyara Bekova, I guess, and also the recent case, the case with the Altan Kapalova, the situation that she is in. I mean, what I'm trying to say here is, yes, it is good that you guys pass those laws, but what do you guys also do in terms of making authorities accountable to implement those laws? Or what have you done in terms of these two cases, specific cases that we mentioned now?
Definitely. So far, we live in the parliamentary form of governance, and the parliament has pretty good functions from the point of view of oversight. So what we are doing, particularly as women parliamentarian, we definitely raise those issues and cases in the parliament on the level of the parliamentary committees and in the plenary session. So regarding those women and cases and regarding the situation, our committee, we actually considered these cases, invited the representatives of Minister of Internal Affairs and the Prosecutor's Office. And definitely we keep those cases under control. Unfortunately, the court system, they are not very open to work regarding the providing information, etc. But we are working for the prosecutor's office, for the government representative, taking them to the account and saying aloud about the current situation. So each committee, we are receiving the information about those cases and try to control and monitor and assist those women and people, you know, to have really the true and transparent consideration of their cases, to provide some support. And regarding the situation with the protests on the 8th of March, when women were really accused and not supported, that was really bad situation. That was really a shame, I think, on the country level. And that was discussed very seriously in the parliament. So we actually tried to press on the government and the Ministry of Internal Affairs for the possible tools. And as we know, some representatives of the Ministry of Internal Affairs, they were dismissed from their positions after that. It was a political decision, unfortunately. So we did what we could within our parliamentary functions. And politically, we rose this issue on the different conference level, on the plenary session. So parliamentary women discussed those cases. And last month, we had the parliamentary hearings regarding the domestic violence, the women's rights, and the whole day in the parliament was devoted discussing the topic. So the parliament is working with that issues. But unfortunately, I agree that still there is a huge amount of job and work for the parliament and the government to make those laws that we accept work in practice. Also, we are developing the new institutions like shelters, you know, and recently one shelter was opened in Bishkek city, in the capital of the Kyrgyz Republic. It was last week. Shelter that should help more women victims of domestic violence to receive the juridical and the psychological support.
Okay, terrific. Thank you very much.
If I can make a quick comment, Mohammed.
Briefly, please, Jasmine, yeah. Go ahead.
So I think important point that Natalia also is talking about is that it's not only all about legislation on paper. It's also very important to work with the population in terms of increasing the cultural awareness. Because what we've noticed that there are very old conservative settings in the cultural environment that enables actually to take violence of these proportions. Is that even women themselves believe that one in three women, according to articles that I read, believe that there are reasons why husbands or partners abuse the women, that whether she didn't cook the dinner or she didn't do this or that. And that unfortunately sits very deeply in the culture. And that is the more important sort of goal to reach. How do you change people's mentality that they would think that women do deserve to have equal treatment or a space at the table, at the negotiating table, to advance their agenda, or even at the level of the community. We've seen with the case of Guljan Pasanova, that prosecutor who herself was a female was making quite inappropriate statements in courtroom. And that's because of the cultural background, we think. She was making statement that Guljan Pasanova was a victim of domestic violence, but she should have left. But the reality is that, unfortunately, women cannot leave in a lot of cases because they don't have any means to survive otherwise. So I think the big piece of the puzzle here is actually working with the population on those cultural settings, right? Cultural values, and explain the population that women's rights are human rights and women deserve equal rights. Mm.
But Jasmine,
can I have a very short comment? I'm sorry.
Yeah, very, very shortly, please. Yeah, we need to move on to the other countries too.
Absolutely agree that it has really cultural basis and very much related with mentality. So as a good example, I'd like to tell that definitely there is the work of mass media, social networks, and the general policy of the government. The role models is very important to raise the idea, the agenda that women should be protected and it's not normal. Domestic violence is not the part of the tradition. So we're trying to raise this issue in the discussion on the top level. But for example, we worked also with religious society and local communities, and that was very good. For example, we adopted the legislation against the bride kidnapping and the child marriage. So we had the practice when the religious imams, let's say, for example, they registered the child marriage based on the religious procedures, and it was not really registered, and sometimes there were girls under 18 years old, so it was not legal. But that was the practice, especially in the regions. So yeah. What we did, we involved in the discussion, not just the local communities, the societies, but also the religious organizations, imams. And now we have the responsibility for imams in our criminal code for registering the child marriage. And I can tell that the statistics on child marriage really decreased for the recent months. It's still not the zero level, but it decreased significantly because now there is the joint work between the religious institution of imams and like the communities and the legislators. Mm.
Totally understand that. Yes, imams are very important. The society and their mentality all are very, very relevant in this case. But I also put the greater responsibility on the authorities. I mean, we have seen in the case of, there was a woman, I guess that was from last year or the year before, Brulai, the bride kidnapping victim. She was killed in the police station. I mean, it says a lot about where government stands in this and how they should be made accountable. But Bruce, earlier we were talking about the case of Altın Kapalova. Yeah, but jump in please here. I mean, since we have Natalia, a parliamentarian, we might be able to find some answer to your question.
No, I mean, I was just curious how that case was going, because of course, and I know we have to move on, just to describe briefly for anyone who's not familiar with it. I mean, she registered, she has three children, and the fathers have had no part in their lives whatsoever. The kids never see them, nothing like that. So she registered them under her own name, using her last name and instead of a patronymic, what we would call a patronymic, I suppose she used a matronymic, and got her children registered. And she went on social networks and started saying, you know, that she was happy that she finally got this done and everything. And then she found out that that's technically illegal to do. And I was just curious how her case is going, because, you know, obviously from where I'm sitting, it seemed like, you know, logically that's what she would have done and that should be accepted. But for some reason, the authorities are insisting that the children have the last name of their father, who again, they've never seen and never comes by. And I was just wondering how that case was going.
Yeah, I think that's a good question for you, Natalia. I mean, how her case is going and what the parliament is doing about that.
Thank you. Actually, for this case, it was really one of the very loud cases, I would say. Actually, we sent the women parliamentarians the special notes and letters to the office of registrar that is responsible for registering the names of the children, etc. And also, as I know, there is kind of the discussion on the court level about this case. So what we're insisting that women parliamentarians, that it can be the case, because in our legislation, there is not really so strong, you know, norms that restrict giving the name after the mother. So there is no like permission, but there is not a restriction as well. So we believe several women parliamentarians that subscribe this letter We believe that according to the legislation, it is possible, and we don't see the reasons to actually not register under the matronymic name. So this is waiting for the answer from the government on this topic, and definitely we're going to consider that on the committee level.
Natalia, just one more question about, I know we are talking too much about Kyrgyzstan, the show is supposed to be about whole Central Asia, but just one question about this specific case. I mean, why that even is an issue there? I mean, what's the source of problem there?
The source of problem for the whole topic, you know, it's regarding the mentality and the tradition. So it's not like very much common, you know, in the society. This is the first case, and the society, many people from the society, they're not very much get used to that, let's say. That is why it became publicly so much like attention, etc. But from the point of view of legislation, there is no really many problems.
Okay, terrific. Thank you very much. So, Irina, I'm sorry, I keep thinking about you while we are focused on Kyrgyzstan. So, Irina, did anything surprise you that from the comments that our colleagues made so far? The second leg of my question should be, how are these comments, these issues that we are talking about in Kyrgyzstan resonating in your country, in Uzbekistan?
I think we have the same problems in all Central Asian region. And what is regarding Uzbekistan? In my opinion, Uzbekistan still has a lot to do to improve the status of women. For example, return the true value of the holiday of March 8th. Because I still see that the heads of ministries and departments on this day emphasize the role of women as keepers of the hearths, of mothers, and decoration of collective. And I think the fight against gender stereotypes must come to the first plan, as in other countries. But we have certain achievements. For example, there are more than 30% of women in the parliament of Uzbekistan. This was a political decision. The quotas were introduced by President Mirziyoyev, but for example, there is only one woman in the government of Uzbekistan. This is 2.5% of the entire government, only one woman. Even among the deputy ministers, there are almost no women. And as in neighboring countries, women are practically not represented at the decision-making level. The same situation in the economic sphere. Women own 24% of firms, only 18% of women own land, also only 11% of enterprises and organizations in Uzbekistan are headed by women. And women spend twice as much time as men on unpaid household work.
Yeah, Irina, I think we did a show on women's role in the society last year. I think you were also part of that show. You know, I heard very similar stories from you and the rest of the panel then. Has anything changed over 2020 for the better or for worse?
I think nothing has changed, in my opinion, because the biggest change was in 2019. When our president adopted two laws. The first was a law against domestic violence, and the second was the gender equality law. But I think the second one doesn't work at all. And the first one introduced us restraining order. But in my opinion, restraining orders in Uzbekistan are not effective because a woman can receive it only for 30 days, for 1 month, and usually the victims are reconciled with the aggressors. Our government, our policemen, they try to reconcile victims and aggressors. So I'm not sure this is a real protection. And the punishment for beatings is usually from $20 to $40 as for minor bodily harm. Although we have an article torture in the law, and according to which aggressor can go to prison for up to 5 years. But usually our policemen, they don't use this article. against domestic aggressors.
Interesting.
Can I jump in something?
Sure.
I wanted to ask you, Irina,
sure.
Something too. Recently, Uzbekistan's justice ministry was saying it was going to make it easier for a woman to divorce her husband. I was curious what your view of that was. I mean, everyone, I personally took it as you said, with some of the laws they passed about gender equality and restraining orders, that it's words and not much action. But I know this is a problem in a lot of Central Asian countries. You know, you had mentioned that victims of domestic violence often are convinced that they should forgive their abuser and keep the family together, but divorce courts also cement that. And now the Uzbek, at least the justice ministry, said that they were going to make it easier for a woman to divorce her husband. What's your view of that?
Well, I think it's very difficult to get a divorce in Uzbekistan. This is a political decision too, in my opinion, because the main value of our society is a family, and they want to keep family by any way. So it doesn't mean that husband and wife, they don't want to live together. Our youth system, they will send them to think for half an year, and then they will decline their application to divorce. And they must apply again, and they will receive 6 months to think, and then decline and apply again, etc.
You were saying, Irina, that now there are more women in the parliament. I want to believe that they are aware of this challenge. They are not doing anything about it?
I'm not sure that our women in parliament, I never heard that our women in parliament discuss these questions. They still accept the main line that the family is the great value and we must keep families. And the policy of our state is to decrease level of divorce. It's unofficial restriction for divorces.
I understand. I mean, that's the government's position, it seems to be. Maybe on some level the society's position. But again, parliamentarians, especially female parliamentarians, who you say are in bigger number now in the parliament, I want to believe that they are aware of this challenge. One would expect that they must be doing something about it. But let's move on. Bruce, we certainly should talk about Kazakhstan and any highlights from the other two countries, Turkmenistan and Tajikistan. What you have been witnessing?
Well, Kazakhstan is very different than Turkmenistan and Tajikistan. That's what I kind of wanted to get out of this conversation today, too, was some of the progress that they've been making in these things. Now, Turkmenistan, you know, forget it. I guess it was progress that they started letting women get their driver's licenses again. That's relative to Turkmenistan. It was that bad that they were actually stopping women and telling them that they couldn't drive their car anymore and they wouldn't even listen to them when they came in and tried to register for a driver's license. So it's true that their speaker of the parliament is a woman, but this is a token, same in Uzbekistan, actually.
Yeah, that has been like that for years, Bruce. It doesn't do much. Uzbekistan is a good comparison, but in their case, at least they put some facade on that. But in Turkmenistan's case, they don't even do that. Really, you know, I have never seen anything outside of the government line being discussed in the Turkmen parliament. So, you know, I don't know what you call that.
Kazakhstan is interesting because, like I said, it gets us into the what I hope we'll talk about here a little bit, too, is that, you know, women's groups have been pretty effective at using social networks.
Mm-hmm.
And they do get some media coverage, too. And not only that, but women have also been very prominent in some of the newer political movements that are coming out. And we've talked with people from Oyan Kazakhstan, for instance, Karman, and there's a lot, big women's presence in those organizations too. So I was kind of curious what, you know, especially about the use of social networks or contact with media to get the message out and across, because, you know, it's one thing to have the law say what it does, but Natalia pointed out that they are passing all kinds of laws, but at the same time, she pointed out that you have to change society's views on this. And that's where, you know, the laws can give you a legal basis for protecting your rights, but they can't change the way people think about what your rights should be. So, you know, that I was more curious about how our guest organizations were working to get the message across to everybody about equal rights for people and respect for women, and, you know, and things like that. What forums are they using? What media outlets will air their views? That kind of thing.
Have you seen anything visible, any visible change in those aspects that you are talking about during 2020?
You know, it might be because I'm watching for it, but yeah. it does seem that there's a lot more traffic and a lot more
on the internet.
Reports given over to the topic of women's rights. You know, certainly in Kyrgyzstan, but you know, even in a place like Tajikistan, it comes up every now and then. And there are organizations there that are using Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and things like that to get their message out. So I was curious because those seem to be the successes. You know, I want to talk about what is working to change the view of society about this.
Yeah, and you know, internet is certainly very important. I mean, but internet is not still in Central Asia, and at least in some countries, are not the primary medium to spread the message, right? I mean, anything other channels are doing in this, Jasmine, have you witnessed any change in this, the way society is being tried to educate in this problem, in this challenge? I mean, we have seen the mentality of people being part of the problem here. Anything has been done about this?
It's interesting that the concept of changing mentality is not new, at least in Kyrgyzstan. I remember that the government there adopted a new concept on working on legal culture, so to say, of the population. I believe the program was timed and covered the period from something like 2014 to 2020, where with the help of UNDP, I believe, the government was establishing new initiatives of how to aid population in terms of, you know, becoming more aware of the rules, of the legal concepts. And they had an initiative, I remember, where it was a bus where several young lawyers would travel to the regions and provide legal consultation to the society. So there are initiatives like that. And there were many initiatives like that through the years. I remember there were anti-corruption campaigns that were targeting younger generation and explaining to them what's wrong is wrong.
So you are saying these are new initiatives, like the one we have seen in 2020 popping up?
In 2020, it was interesting that because of COVID, we did not see those initiatives, or at least I'm not aware of those initiatives, but I'm hopeful that they will be on the radar for the government as well. What we have seen is that, for example, Kazakhstan is really good, and civil society there, in terms of monitoring court procedures, that they have several ways and platform of how they deliver messages about court hearings and distribute it through, I believe, Telegram channel or something like that, which is very effective. In minutes, you are able to hear what's happening there in court. And I believe in Kyrgyzstan, it has very similar initiatives as well, with a reform of putting everything on digital format and make information accessible. But in terms of the 2020, I can't, and I probably don't know, but maybe Natalia would know better. But obviously, the Facebook, Telegram, WhatsApp has been very popular. Now we cannot travel. That's the way how we manage lots of situations and proceedings.
Right. You know, it's interesting what you say. In the meantime, when we had our last show a year ago, I guess, so we were talking about the wave that the women marchers were creating in Kyrgyzstan, and then the wave the feminist female artist in Tajikistan has created was very fresh. You remember the exhibition she had of her portraits in Dushanbe. And also in Kazakhstan, women's leading role in anti-government protests were very much the topic of today then when we had the conversation last year. Today, I was hoping to have Asiya Tolesova, one of the female activists from Kazakhstan, to join us, but we couldn't make it. Though they were thought-provoking, which draw lots of public attention to the issue that we are talking about today. So what happened to them? And what role did women play in some of the major political changes that the region has gone through in 2020, and especially talking about Kyrgyzstan here? So let's continue the conversation talking about these and many other questions very shortly. First, let me recap the debate. Today on the Majlis podcast, I'm joined by Natalia Nikitenko, a member of the Kyrgyz Parliament, Irina Matvienko, feminist and founder of Nemolchi Uz, Jasmine Cameron, senior staff attorney at the Center for Human Rights of American Bar Association, Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free Europe, Liberty's Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owozi. I'm Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis podcast here in Washington, D.C., and we are discussing the role of women in Central Asian society. And I know we are way out of time, but let's handle a couple of other politics-related questions quickly if possible. One of that is obviously Kyrgyzstan. A lot has happened there in 2020. Natalia, maybe you are best positioned to answer this question. So a lot has happened. A lot has happened there, but has there been any notable change in women's role in some of those developments, or any of those developments has changed women's role there for the better? And how you portray the role that women has played in these major developments there?
Yeah, that actually the last year was difficult for the whole globe, you know, so because of the pandemic, so many visual activities, let's say, like we used to have the conferences, the meetings, the work with societies, they were not allowed for some period of time. And despite of that, I would raise the issue that the social networks became more efficient tool, more visual and more used for raising the topic of human rights, the women's rights and protection from the domestic violence. So there were several initiatives that were created like that in the Facebook and Instagram. There were a number of different groups, etc., which helped to link the women, the potential victims and the victims of domestic violence, with the government officials, with the Minister of Social Care, with the Ombudsman Office, etc. So I know the group of young activists, IT activists, who really worked on that, create more visual instruments for that. Even one of the activists, they offered the interesting idea to have this kind of the bracelet for women with a special button, you know, in the case of the problems, etc., so she could kind of give the signal to the social networks, to the government officials. So there were many different like initiatives on the level of young generation, the volunteers, the social networks, to raise this topic, to more efficiently protect the women who are in the trouble or need the help immediately, to create those digital links. And I think it's very good, like, approach that is growing right now and developing. And definitely due to the COVID, it became even more developed for the recent year. And I would like to mention also that there were created a number of kind of the short videos. And we also participated as a member of parliament. And also there were the stories of real women, the victims of the domestic violence, who told their stories. And those videos, they were sent through WhatsApp, the Telegram messages, etc., to women organizations, to the regions, in different languages, to give more information and awareness that it's not normal, it's not true. The domestic violence is not the part of the tradition, or it's not the part of the normal life. They will also send the information under this video about the numbers, telephone numbers and social networks links where women can call and get some help, etc. And the UN organization supported those series of videos on the level of like political level, raising the agenda through the women politicians, saying that is not normal, saying that we're going to protect, we're going to raise this issue, and also the stories of these real women.
Yeah, that's interesting. It sounds like, in general, from all of your comments, that the activism on social media seems to be one of the highlights from the 2020 in this case. Now I'm in the mission of trying to end this conversation with a positive note. So, Irina, I know there are many lowlights that you have mentioned. Is there any highlights which gives you a hope that 2021 might be a better year for gender equality in your country, Uzbekistan? I mean, any development which has the potential of making some real difference in terms of getting closer to gender equality in the country?
Yes, we had three loud cases on domestic violence last year, when abusers were comprised to eight, and it was a success, I think, because yes, it's only three cases. It's not too much, but we didn't have such a reaction in previous years. We didn't have it. The first case was about a husband who beat her wife, and video of one activist, she placed this video in internet, and it was a very famous case. And first of all, the police tried to close this case, and after public announcement, they opened the case again, and he was imprisoned at 8 years, as I remember. The second case was a case of women who Her husband forced her to eat fecalis, and she sent me this video because he just filmed it. And after that, he was in prison up to 3 years. And the last case, it was a case of Uzbek singer who raped young girl with his friends. And they were imprisoned to 10 or 15 years. I don't remember. But usually we never heard about these cases, about this imprisonment, because when rapist or abuser have power, have money, victim can do nothing. So I think these three cases give me a hope. Something can change.
Yeah, indeed. Thanks for sharing these examples, Irina. They are anecdotal, but at least reflect some real change otherwise in a PR-savvy Uzbekistan. Bruce, like you and the other speakers were also talking about this, the change which is being achieved through social media activism in 2020 is certainly something to hold for, given the COVID-19. If we learn anything from 2020 lockdown, is that the prominence of online space is going to grow in our lives going forward. But the street level activism that I was talking about earlier, the types of which we have seen in Bishkek's Women March, or the feminist exhibition in Tajikistan, or very visible leadership of ladies in various youth-led activism in Kazakhstan, etc. Again, for real change to happen in any country, the online activism cannot compensate the street-level engagement, at least. This is what we have seen so far from other parts of the world. So I'm thinking of masses being mobilized, demanding certain things to happen. So what's the future for such mobility, the types of which we have seen, the types of which we were talking about during our March 8 conversation last year, how those movements have been doing in 2020 and what the future holds for them?
It's hard for me to say this totally objectively because, of course, I've been looking to see how women's groups have been active, both in the media and on social networks. And it seemed to me that they did take advantage of the fact that people were stuck at home using their computers. And I saw a lot more posts coming from women's groups or active individual activists within these groups about women's rights, what their movement was doing. And of course, they've held some video conferences and things like that, too. So again, I was hoping that our guests would tell us a little bit more about what progress they might have seen in the last year, and what they would ask the public to do to help them in the year that's coming.
Okay, let's end the conversation with the point you are raising, Bruce. So to start with, Natalia, based on the progress and setbacks you have seen in your country during 2020 in terms of struggle for gender equality, how do you see you are entering to 2021 as to how this year might proceed in those aspects? And also, what are your hope and expectations, and what are the indicators or signs you are basing your hopes on?
Definitely, we have many expectations related with the coming year, this year, current year, let's say, in the coming years, to strengthen the positions of women's society on the key positions, political positions, to protect the women's rights more loudly, more visually. So one serious challenge for us this year will be to keep and to save the women's quotas, special norms and quotas, in the electoral code, in the electoral legislation. Because, as I mentioned, we are going to change the constitution. Now there is a very hard debates and discussion and many negative things that can be said about the process and many risks for democratic values that we can see. And in this aspect, we are very much interested to fight for keeping the positions that we already have with women's representations and access to the decision-making on the local level and on the central parliament level. This is definitely the one of the very serious dimensions of work for us as like parliamentarians and politicians. And the second thing is definitely to continue the work together with women's organizations, which are very strong in Kyrgyzstan. Our civil society is really very strong, to work more visually with the government, NGO sector, mass media, social media, etc., to raise the issue of zero tolerance to domestic violence, violence against women and children on the very top discussed level, to increase the work on more visualization, more content on that topic, And definitely we're going to concentrate on the practical tools and mechanisms how to make our very good legislation protecting on paper legally the women's rights to be more efficient in the practice in law enforcement sector. Mm-hmm. So there is a huge work that we're expecting to be done with the judicial system. Because, unfortunately, so many cases and those women that were mentioned, their cases, like Aliya Arabiko, like Guljan Pasano, other women that we have, actually cases of many women, they're even pretty good, like considered, etc., on the level of investigation. But sometimes when it comes to the court, under the pressure of relatives sometimes, under not the transparent court system or other reasons, sometimes those cases, they're not very successful, so they're not protecting the victim, and she's under the pressure, actually sometimes refuses to support this position. And so we're going to work with changing the judicial system to continue this work.
Okay.
But first of all, the constitutional reform will be the first issue because it's going to change seriously the structure, including the judicial system, and it's going to consider the monopoly of the president, absolute monopoly. This is a serious risk for those democratic values that we fought for many years and pretty good with them now.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Jasmine, let's also get your thought on that. I mean, where your eyes is going to be in terms of the types of issues that you mentioned in your report and also in your comments here. And also, is there any suggestion that you might have to Natalia, to the authorities, or to any other stakeholders in this matter?
Yeah, of course. Thank you so much. Well, I guess the main request is obviously for the governments to continue in the system, local systems, to continue to implement international and national commitments and norms. As we discussed here earlier, that Kyrgyzstan, for example, and all of the Central Asian countries actually ratified ICCPR, CEDAW Convention. But the problem, again, is implementation, that the government should create more enabling environments and institutional systems. They need to reduce violence against women and strengthen their voices. A lot of work remains with raising awareness of the public, as Natalia underlined as well. But the important thing to remember that this is not only initiative or task for women, right? It's a collective responsibility where women and men need to work together to change and transform all of the systems, cultural settings, cultural institutions. So it's task for all of us, not only for civil society and women organizations, but for the whole of society. Because if women succeed in societies, everyone succeeds.
Yeah. The question is that, right, Jasmine, how to make that happen? If you ask authorities or maybe parliamentarians like Natalia, they would say that they are working on this issue. They are working through legislation, through, I don't know, whatever tools and mechanism they have. But, you know, the problem still persists. And is there any radical method that you could share with those responsible in Central Asia to make this finally happen? I mean, we don't have to be talking about the same problems, same painful stories every year, right? When it has to change at the end. Is there any really a kind of impractical method that you could share with the stakeholders finally to make this change happen?
Sure, absolutely. Well, we start always with the government because government is the main actor who can implement all of those programs, right? But civil society also has a huge role, as well as international community. So there should be, from civil society, international community, there should continue systemic scrutiny and monitoring of this institution. The pressure should be put on the government as well as the civil society to watch the operations of the system, facilities, policies, you know, written and unwritten rules, and more importantly, those to create cultures to reveal and remedy, investigate those unseen barriers, right, that we were talking about as well, in order to allow for women's full participation. So it's not just one person, it's actually everyone has a role in it. As I mentioned, the government has the main role, the internal law enforcement, as soon as complaint about domestic violence comes in, everyone should play their part. Police should investigate. First of all, they should accept the complaint. Secondly, they should investigate. Prosecutors should have to build a really strong case and then pass it along to courts, where courts, judges have to play a certain role as independent arbiters. Prosecutors have to have strong case, defense attorneys. So it's the whole system has to really, really sort of be cognizant, not only in terms of implementing general fair trial standards, but also specifically paying attention to cases where women are victims of violence, of cases that we were highlighting. So that's, I guess, probably not the answer that you were looking, that there is not one solution, but it's sort of variety.
Yeah, perhaps. What I was thinking is perhaps maybe it's a topic for another conversation, but what I think is that, yes, you are right, the change has to include many actors, as you are suggesting. Apparently, you have a very active civil society in Kyrgyzstan, and earlier Natalia was talking about that too. These are signs of progress, but at the same time, these atrocities continue against women in the society, and the painful part is this is happening when there are so many women in power, in the parliament, in the speaker's chamber, and until recently, deputy prime minister's women in ministers. You know, for me, forget about the other Central Asian countries. At least speaking of Kyrgyzstan, the country has every condition to make this change happen. But why are we still seeing horrible cases of domestic violence against women? I mean, why we keep seeing Burulais, Guljans? I mean, if women empowerment changes these practices, then you got the power. Why changes is so slow and painful, and what needs to happen so that this change finally takes place? But of course, maybe we don't have time to go through this. I mean, what I'm saying is like the conditions seems to be right, especially in Kyrgyzstan, when we look into Central Asia, so that this change happens, so that we don't keep talking about this every year about domestic violence or the specific examples that you have mentioned.
Yeah, sure. I guess, well, first of all, any change takes a long time, right? But a main factor, it's actually lack of political will. In any reform, there should be strong political will to deliver a specific solution for a specific problem, right? And it involves several factors. There should be a network of government officials that are truly committed to the reform. They should have understanding of what the problem is. The government also has to ensure that those programs have, for example, sufficient financial support, that they have human resources support, right? We've seen through the history of Kyrgyzstan that every single president wanted to have new reforms, but unfortunately there was a lack of political will. So I think one of the, probably that's what you're getting at, that the main factor is actually for the government to have that political will, for them to realize that this is a very serious problem in every society in Central Asia. And unfortunately, well, yes, you're right. We have wonderful members of parliament like Natalia, but from the government, there should be more than just individual members of the parliament, right? There should be a commitment from the government to have those solutions reached. There should be commitment from network of politicians, not only executive. It should be independent judiciary should play the role, as I mentioned before. Right. Legislative, like Natalia, should adopt all of those laws. So my final word is probably that there should be political will to actually implement all of the reforms and make sure that all of those laws are working in practice.
Right. Okay. We need to really wrap up the discussion. Look, maybe just final word from you, Irina, in Brewston. Irina, so what you will be doing in working on, and where your eyes will be?
Well, we are planning to establish a volunteers network, because I feel we need more people to continue our work, because I see there's difficulties, psychological difficulties, when the same team works on the same problems, and we can't change nothing. I don't know, but sometimes I feel that our hands get down. So we are planning to raise our network of volunteers. Also, I involved two jurists in our team, and we launched online psychological help last year, and we are going to continue this help in 2021.
Right. Okay, Bruce, let's end the conversation with you, where your eyes will be, what you will be watching at.
Well, we all hope that this pandemic is starting to ease and things will be able to move around a lot more in public. So just to see what happens once you're able to go out in public, and you know, will there be more feminine, like art exhibits, and will there be more rallies? You know, I mean, actually, I don't have to look much further than this Monday. What will happen on Monday when it's actually International Women's Day? But yeah, just to see, you know, how much more active people can get now that as the opportunities present themselves to get out and get around and be more public.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much, Bruce Panier, the editor of Ready for Your Pride Liberty Central Asia blog, Shlok Awazi. Unfortunately, we have to conclude the discussion right here. We are way over time than usual. And also, big thanks goes to Natalia Nikitenko, member of the Kyrgyz Parliament, Irina Matvienko, feminist and founder of Nimulchi.uz, Jasmine Cameron, senior staff attorney at the Center for Human Rights of the American Bar Association. Again, thank you very much, colleagues, for your time and thoughts today. And this is from me, Mohammed Tahir, Ready for Your Pride Liberties Media Manager and host of the Majlis podcast here in Washington, D.C. Until next week, bye-bye.